So in this text called the Kaivalya Upanishad, Upanishad is the highest knowledge of the Vedas, and it's given in the last portion after you have done the preliminary study. This is a fairly advanced, or I would say a PhD text. But this particular text is closely related to meditation. As we have seen in the earlier verses, the teacher talks about the technique of meditation, the importance of meditation, and then what we should meditate upon. See, most schools of meditation talk a lot about the technique. You know, you do your breathing or do some yoga, do some breathing, do some chanting, and that's all very good, and that all helps to quieten the mind. But after my mind is quiet, not many people teach that. It's not a criticism, it's just a fact. It's the Upanishad only that tells you what is the goal of meditation, what is the purpose of meditation. And they say that meditation is to turn the attention away from the world of objects. See, in this figure, I think myself to be the body, mind, and intellect. And with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. And vasanas are my habits or tendencies which push me to act. The reason I act is because of vasanas. Like if I want to go out and have a pizza, it's because I feel the desire to eat. Or somebody, an alcoholic, wants to go out and drink. It is all propelled by the vasanas, the desire. Somebody wants to go out and buy a new car. So it is the desires, the vasanas. And above that is Om, that is the Lord within, which we identify here as Om. It is the consciousness. And so in meditation, we turn the attention away from the world of objects and turn it inward to the Lord's presence within. And ultimately, what we had heard last week, that there is one Lord, God, the Brahman, the substratum of this whole universe, who takes different forms. He takes the form of Jesus or Buddha or Allah, the different names, or Krishna or Shiva, or Mother Goddess. And then that consciousness is the creator of this whole universe. The whole universe emerged from that, is supported by that, and ultimately the universe will merge into that consciousness. But that consciousness itself cannot be seen, cannot be experienced. It can only be known as me, because everything is that consciousness, because everything emerged just as all parts are nothing but mud, because they came from mud. So similarly, since we all came from that one creator, we are that. All ornaments are gold, all waves are ocean. So similarly, since we came from that, our true nature as Om is that consciousness. But right now I misidentify as the body, mind, and intellect. How to disidentify and recognize my oneness with that Lord is explained very beautifully in this verse, which will show us how I can disidentify from this world of objects and become one with that creator, experience my oneness with that total consciousness. So it is verse number 18 on page 66. Verse number 18 on page 66. I just wanted to give a little introduction to what we have covered so far. Trishu dhamasu yad bhogyam. Bhokta bhogascha. Yad bhavet. Tebhyo vilakshana sakshi. Chinmatroham. Sadashivaha. If you can't chant, you don't have to be intimidated. It's good if you can. If not, you can just silently. So we'll just go word by word meaning. So Trishu Dhamasu, in these three worlds, as we have said, we throughout the day live in three different worlds. So what different world? I only live in Bakersfield. Yes, but in Bakersfield, we live in three different worlds. One is the waking world, which you and I are in right now. maybe in a few of you, maybe in a, you know, so all of you are now in the waking world, and then when we go to sleep, we are in the dream world. So before you go to sleep, you go into this dream, or you go into the sleep, but when you are waking up, you are in the dream world. So there is a waking world, then there is the dream world in which you experience your own dreams, you create your own world, and then there is the world of deep sleep, which some of you by the end of the class may be in that third state, but right now hopefully we are all awake. So this world of deep sleep is the third world. And we live there too. So we sleep, we stay awake for 12, 14 hours. Then we are asleep for 6-7 hours. And then as we are waking up, we are creating dreams. Or also as we are going to sleep, we are creating dreams. So this waking world is the world that is, we say, has been created by God. Then there is the world of dreams, which I create myself. Combining various experiences, we create this world, and then there is the world of deep sleep in which there is no experience. In that, there is nothing but complete absence of experience. But I know in the morning that I slept well or I did not sleep well. I know that in the morning. So in these three worlds, that what do? I carry out functions called experiences. So I'm experiencing, like right now you're experiencing this class. Before you came, you were driving. So you are experiencing driving. But it is not one. Any experience needs three factors. Like you were driving the car. So the driver is driving the car. So when I'm hearing, so you are hearing my voice. So hearer, hearing and heard, driver, driving and driven, like eating. Suppose you're eating lunch, you're eating a sandwich. So eater, eating and eaten. So the person is eating. So any experience needs three factors. Any to experience anything, you need an experiencer, experiencing and experienced. So here are the three. So even to enjoy something, you need an enjoyer. Who is enjoying what is enjoyed, right? That's clear. So similarly, so these three are required in any state. In the waking state, you need three. Now in the dream state, you say, I alone am there. There are not three. No, there are three. Like in my dream, I dreamt that I reached the airport and the plane took off and I missed my flight. So now I am standing at the airport watching the plane as it takes off. So I am watching the plane. So there is an experiencer, me, who is experiencing that plane as it is taking off from the runway, and I miss my flight. Oh, I'm so sad. And then I'm also experiencing the airport and experiencing my sadness. So the experiencer is there in the dream also. And then how about in the deep sleep? Also in the deep sleep, there is an experiencer, because in the morning I know I slept well or I did not sleep well. So there is an experiencer in all three states. There is experiencing and experienced in the waking, dream and deep sleep. Now, what is the problem? The problem is not in experiencing. You know, when we walk around, you have to see objects. You have to hear, you have to taste, smell, touch. You have to feel, you have to see. The problem comes when I identify with it. Like seeing a car is not a problem. I walk, I see a BMW, I see a Mercedes, I see a Lamborghini. Seeing the car is not. When does the problem come? When I say I want it to be mine. Right now I own a Chevrolet or I own an old Toyota, but I want to buy that Mercedes. So when that identification, that's when the problem arises. That's when the ego arises. Otherwise, the ego is not an issue. The ego is when it is I or mine. Like now I have a small house. I wish I had a bigger house. Or I have a big house. And that guy next door, his house is half my size. So he's inferior to me. So I am judging people on the size of their house or the size of their car or their bank balance, or you know, or his children went to Harvard and mine only went to Cal State. So I and mine is a problem. My child, my house, my car, my... So when the I and my arises, that's when the ego arises. Otherwise, the world is going on and let it happen. I do my best. I'm not saying that you don't do your best. But when you start judging your worth based on I and mine, that's when the ego arises. That's when the problem arises. So you do your best. And at the end of the day, whatever is happening, there is a greater power than me that is running everything. I am not, because the moment I think I am doing, that's when the problem arises. So, Lord, you are doing everything. If it goes well, the credit goes to you. If it didn't go well, then maybe I didn't do a good enough job. Next time I'll do better. But even then, you don't take the discredit. The credit and discredit all goes to the higher. I do my best. And this reminds me of a beautiful story, a farmer story. Because when I am a doer, then the enjoyer comes. See, when I did something, I do well. Ah, I'm so wonderful. I did a great job. And when I don't do well, I am lousy. I am useless. I am worthless. I am good for nothing. So when the doer is there, then the enjoyer is there, or the sufferer. Or if the actions didn't go well, then I suffered. So there is a farmer story, which is a beautiful one. I heard a long time ago from Swami Chinmayananda himself. He says there was a farmer who was carrying a heavy load on his head. It was very hot, you know, it was the middle of the summer in India. He was carrying this heavy load because he had grown some stuff in the village, and he was carrying it to the town to sell it. And it was a few miles, and he was carrying that on his head. He had wrapped it nicely so it wasn't messy. But it was heavy and it was hot, and the sweating and the mud on his face, but he just kept on walking. And it so happened the king passed by in his carriage. He had a huge carriage, you know, beautiful carriage. And he passes by, and somehow, you know, farmers are walking every day, but somehow he feels sorry for that farmer that day. And king was a nice person. So he says, stops the carriage, tells the driver, tells the farmer, get on. Farmer, get on. First of all, he gets intimidated. The king himself on his chariot and carriage, and he's asking me, he gets scared. He said, no, don't be scared. Even the soldier says, don't be scared. The king wants you to get. So he gets on the carriage. Very reluctantly, he climbs on, and the carriage starts. And he's still holding that load on his head, and the carriage is moving. So the king says, why are you holding the load on your head? Put it down. You know, it's a big carriage. There's a lot of space. No, it's your lordship, I can't put the load down. Why don't you put the load down? He said, sir, you're doing me enough favor, your carriage carrying me. Why do I want to put the load of my this on my head, also on your carriage? At least let me carry the load myself. The carriage is carrying both, but he had this idea that I should carry the load, so I don't put too much load on your carriage. But that is called ego. That is how we all are. Because we all think that I am doing things. But the Lord is the one that is carrying us. Not only carrying us, but even carrying our load. Whatever I am doing, everything is happening because of His grace. But it is my ego that I start thinking, I am so wonderful, I am so great. Just as that person wouldn't put his load down thinking he's still carrying it. So we also carry the burden of our joys and sorrows because of the ego. The moment you disidentify from the ego, that's why they say purify and disidentify. What do we mean by purify? Purify your mind. Your mind, which is full of anger, greed, jealousy, selfishness, I and mine. You reduce that. You reduce the selfishness, reduce the ego, reduce the anger, greed, jealousy. And your mind, which becomes pure, can then disidentify from objects, emotions, and thoughts. I think that I am the doer, I am the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. I do so and so, I am so great, I am so that. So disidentify from this doership, and then you can get out of this bondage. Otherwise, you're always caught. You know, I did this, it went well, I'm happy. It didn't go well, I'm unhappy. This person loves me, this person doesn't love me. So I'm always caught at the body with my achievements, at the mind with my emotions. Somebody loves me, somebody doesn't love me. Yesterday he used to love me, and today he loves somebody else. So Why? Because I'm identified with this ego, and that's when all the sorrows come. So they say disidentify with your ego. And what do you identify with? How do you get out? By becoming a witness. That's why he says, Trishu dhamasu yad bhogyam bhokta shi bhogach yad bhave tebhyo vilakshana sakshi. Sakshi means the witness. So of these three, the doer, the doing and the done, the enjoyer and enjoying, I am the witness. I am separate from these. I am not the ego. I am not the enjoyer. I am not the enjoying. I am not even the enjoyed. They say, okay, enjoyed I am not. Enjoying I am not. How can I not be the enjoyer? I am listening right now, right? So how can I say I am not the listener? I am eating. How can I say I am not the eater? I am driving. How can I say I am not the driver? So they say that whatever is happening at the body level, experiencing objects, at the mind feeling emotions, at the intellect thinking thoughts, why is it happening? Because of vasanas, right? Because of desires, that's what makes the alcoholic drink, that's what makes the person, sportsman go and play or watch sports, that's what makes. So it is the vasanas or desires which is the driving force behind all the activities. Like today we had this desire to learn about meditation, so we all assembled here. So how do I detach? How do I disidentify? And how do I become a witness? So the example they give is of the watch. The watch is moving. So now say I have a watch. It is a battery. You know, we have a battery. You put in the watch and the watch is moving. The hours, the minutes, the seconds. You know, it's a moving watch and it's moving. Now the watch is moving and I am watching it, right? But suppose with the watch moving, my hand also starts moving. You know, 12 o'clock. So my hand is here. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, the watch is moving and I am moving with it. He said, are you a fool or what? You are not supposed to move with the watch. The watch is moving. You just watch it. That's why they call it a watch. You're supposed to watch. He said, no. When the watch moves, then I feel like moving. That is what your foolishness is. So, and how long does the watch move? As long as the battery is there. When the battery dies, the watch will stop moving. Until the battery dies, the watch will move. So what is your job? To watch the movement of the hands. And then do your functions. Okay, it's 12 o'clock, time for lunch. It's 5 o'clock, time for tea. 8 o'clock, time for dinner and time for sleep. So all those activities I do. But I do not get caught in the movement of the watch. So similarly, when the battery dies, the watch will stop, right? So similarly, when the vasanas end, the selfish desires end, the movement of the body, mind and intellect will stop. Stop. It does not mean that I will stop functioning, but the ego, the I and my will end. When does the ego arise? When I have desires, when I have selfish desires, and when I get them, I become happy. When I don't get them, I become unhappy. So the ego arises when there are selfish desires. But when there is no selfish desire, when I'm not working for I or mine, I'm working for the Lord, then where is the sense of ego? Like when you look at these saints, look at all these saints, you know, look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at Narasimha Mehta, look at Mirabai, look at all these saints. When they were working in the world, they had no ego because they said, the Lord is working through me. I am his instrument. So they had no I or mind. They had no idea of possession. That they had no idea that I want to make a great faith called Christianity or Sikhism or Buddhism. No, they did not want to start any faith. They did not. Their idea was that the Lord has sent me here to serve the world. That's their only idea. And with that motive, they worked in the world without I or mind. It is later on the followers, you know, made Christianity, Buddhism, Sikhism, which is okay. There's no problem with that. But the founder had no idea of ego, had no concept of I or mine. So when there are no vasanas, when there is no ego, then the activities go on, but I am not involved in the activities. Just as the watch is going on, but when I am not involved, then the watch stops. It's okay, you know, the watch stopped. I am not involved. So same way, the world is functioning. As long as I think I am the ego, I am working, till that extent I will be bound. But if I work without attachment, without identification, what do I say? Chinmatroham, I am the pure consciousness alone. How do you do that? By being a witness. So what does a witness do? In the book also, there is a beautiful commentary. He says that there is a procession going on. So I would encourage you after the class, when you go home, read the commentary, because the commentary is marvelous. Very well has been written. So read it at least twice. But in that he says that I'm standing on the balcony and there is a parade going on. So I'm watching the parade. I don't have a son or daughter in the parade. I'm not involved in the parade. I'm just watching, enjoying the Thanksgiving parade, Macy's. And I have a house on, you know, Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue where the parade is going. And so I'm watching the parade in New York, and the Macy's parade is going on 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. So I'm enjoying the parade. I'm watching all the floats. And when the parade ends, it's gone. And I was watching disinterested because I didn't have a son or daughter in the parade. I didn't own a float. I was just watching it. And when the parade ended, did I disappear? No, I was still there, but there was nothing for me to watch. There was no parade. All I saw was an empty street. So the one who was watching without involvement, without interest, when the parade ends, then what happens? I alone remain as the watcher, as the witness, but I have nothing left to witness. So then I no longer am a witness. I am just awareness. Right? Is that clear? So similarly, what happens in meditation, when I sit, my mind is running very fast. The thoughts are running. And I'm involved in the thoughts. You know, I have to go to work tomorrow, or I have to go to work in an hour, and then at work, you know, she is giving me trouble, my employee or my coworker or my boss, and how am I going to deal with it? And, you know, oh, I have so many problems, and my husband problem and wife problem, and children, all those thoughts come, you know, and then my mind is so disturbed. Then you say, I can't meditate. So I get up, close my, you know, put my meditation seat aside. So let me go take a shower. So the thoughts will continue to bother you in meditation as long as you identify. It's like in that parade. If you are identified, you know, my son is in the parade, and then somehow he gets an inside seat and nobody sees him. He doesn't show up on the TV. Then I get so upset. You know, look at the teacher. He put my son inside. If he had put my son outside, the TV would. Then I get angry. But if my son is not there, somebody else's son is there. Do I care whether he's inside or outside? No, because I am not involved. So similarly, in the thoughts, in meditation, when you get involved in the thoughts, then the thoughts have a hold on you. But you say, okay, the thought is arising of work. I have problems at work. Okay, then I have problems at home. Okay, then I have problems with my children. Okay, so these thoughts are arising in meditation. Yeah, there are. I'm not saying there are no problems. But at this moment, I'm a meditator. I'm not going to worry about those thoughts. I'm going to deal with them after meditation. So what about if the thoughts arise? I cannot stop them from arising. That's true. You cannot stop them. But you can be a witness. Sa-akshi. Sa-akshi means with eyes. That means a witness, eyewitness. So you witness the thoughts. Okay, there is an angry thought, there is a jealous thought, there is a sad thought, there is a problem thought. But I am not involved, I am watching the thoughts. Okay, there is a work problem, yes, there is a children problem, yes, there is a husband problem, yes, there is a money problem. Okay, these are all there, but I am not involved, I am watching the thought. So what will happen is, the mind can only create thoughts as long as you support the thoughts. Where is the mind getting the energy from? From the consciousness. That is the conscious. So when the consciousness, that is me, when I do not identify with the mind, I do not identify with the thought, I watch the thought, then slowly the mind has no energy of its own. I am feeding the mind. Even though they say, oh, thoughts arise, you know, you don't know how much they bother me. I have so much stress, my mind is stressed. Who is giving energy to the mind to create stressful thoughts? I am. The mind itself, in deep sleep, do you have stress? No, because the mind is asleep. But when I wake up, then I give energy to my mind to stress me. And then I say, my mind is stressed, I can't sleep, I can't function, I need a Xanax, or I need a Valium, or I need something. Why? Because I'm stressed. So when you identify with the thoughts, that's when the problem arises. If you do not identify with the thought, you just watch it, then you are pure consciousness alone. Then there is nothing. Then the mind will automatically stop. The mind will stop functioning when it is watched. And in that silence, when the mind is stopped, then I alone am. Just as the witness was alone on the balcony, when the parade ends, then he alone is there. There is nothing for him to watch. There is emptiness. So similarly in meditation, when I don't identify with the thoughts, the mind becomes still. When you watch the thoughts, do not identify, do not encourage the thoughts, do not go running with the thoughts, because the work thought comes, then I have to go to work, then what am I going to wear, and what am I going to eat, and whom am I going to meet, all those things come. You say, no, at this moment I'm not at work, I'm a meditator, I'm sitting in my room. So you don't encourage the thought. Then what happens? You become pure consciousness alone, the watcher who has nothing to watch, the witness who has nothing to witness. When there is nothing to witness, then the witness is no longer a witness. Then he becomes consciousness, and that is me. That is me, and that is the Lord, that is the Sadashiva, the auspicious Lord. So the Lord that is outside, that we call as Shiva or Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, is also the Lord within me that is working, that is making me work. So there is only one consciousness inside and outside. And so me and that consciousness are one, because everything is that Lord. When everything is that Lord, the chair is the Lord, the glass, the mic, the book, I am also that. So everything is that. So that understanding comes when you become a witness. Do not identify. So disidentify and get out. That's the method. By being a witness and understanding, that is me, that consciousness is me, and I am no longer identified with the thoughts, then the thoughts cannot persecute me. The thoughts will only persecute me when I become one with that. I've given the example many times. The Kern River is flowing, you know, at full speed. If I get in the river, then the river will pull me and take me and drown me. But if I stand on the banks on, you know, 178 and watch the river, then I can enjoy, stand on the rocks and enjoy the flow. No matter, the faster the river, the more I enjoy that. So similarly, the thoughts, if I'm caught in them, then they take me for a ride. But if I can watch it as a witness, then I can enjoy the flow of my mind, and ultimately the mind becomes still. And that is the process of meditation. So disidentify and get out. Get out of the thoughts and become one with that pure consciousness, which is me, which is my higher nature. Is that clear to everybody? It's kind of a difficult subject. I know you're here for the first time, but I hope I was able to, yeah. So any questions, any comments about this? I know it's something that needs some thinking, and that's why I would encourage everybody to go home and read this commentary. It's beautiful, the way this Swamiji has written. So please go home and read it carefully at least twice. 66 and 67, that's where we are. But anyway, so now are there any questions, any comments? Anything that's not clear, or anything you want to add?
To not become attached to it, what is the best way to focus on the senses, or just allowing the thoughts to come in, or maybe a combination of both, and leave?
I think that's a very good question. So the senses will continue to function. The eyes will see, like in meditation. Now suppose there is a sound, right? I hear the car. And it was my neighbor Bob, who is going to work at 6 in the morning. And his car is, you know, running, right? Now the sound has come. You cannot stop the sound from coming. But suppose you start thinking, it's neighbor Bob. Why does he go to work so early? What is he doing? Why, you know, why can't he sleep like the rest of us? What's wrong with... So then what is happening is you have become identified with that thought, you know, or, you know, or this today he's taking the sports car. I can hear the sound of the sports car. I wish I had a sports car like Bob. So then what is, you heard the sound of a sports car. There's nothing wrong with that. You say, okay, the sports car is good. But the moment you start thinking, why is it happening? Then you are identified. So the sound is coming, but do you identify with the sound or not? You just say, okay, the sound has come, Bob has gone to work. And then you hear the birds chirping. Or you say, oh, the Lord is chirping. You know, the birds chirping in the morning, when I hear, I see it is the Lord singing. It's so beautiful. But then you say, ah, it's so beautiful. I wish I could get up this early in the morning every... Then what is happening? You are giving importance to the thought. You are becoming identified. Or you are smelling coffee. You know, your wife made some coffee. You say, ah, the smell of coffee. I wish, you know, I can end my meditation soon. Then what is happening? You are becoming identified. You say, okay, coffee is being made. I'll get it after meditation. Then you don't think about it. You don't further encourage that thought. So that is the... And same thing when you are walking, you will see things. You will hear things. You will... Some people will praise you. Some people will criticize you. Some will love you. Some will hate you. But if you become identified with that emotion of love or hate, or why does he love me? Why does he hate me? Then you are affected. Otherwise, you say, I am that pure consciousness. And some people will love me. People even hated a saint like Jesus. I mean, you know, all these great saints, whether you look at the Sikh gurus or all the Indian saints, they were all persecuted by society. You know why? Because they thought different from the rest of us. They thought different, and we said, this guy is different, let's kill him. That's how we treat all our saints, because they think at a higher level than you and me. And anybody who thinks different from us, we think this guy should be got rid of. And that's why all the discrimination happens. Why? Because this guy is a different color, or a different nationality, or a different race, or a different religion. You know, or not only within religion, I'm a Christian and he's a Protestant, so let me kill him. You know, those kind of things. You know, in Ireland, we saw so much of that. They both belong to Jesus. In the name of Jesus, they were killing each other. And same thing in the Muslims, Shias and Sunnis. You know, it's all over, even in India, from people from different sects, you know, hate each other. So it is because we identify with that, but the saints don't. For them, praise and blame is equal. They don't even hate the person who is persecuting them. So that is how I should function in the world. I should realize that at this moment, I have a body, and the body one day will be healthy, one day will be unhealthy. One day will be hot, one day will be cold. The mind one day will be happy, one day will be unhappy. It's not always going to be happy. If it is happy today, it is likely it will be unhappy tomorrow. If it is unhappy today, it will be happy tomorrow. The intellect, today I am successful, tomorrow I may be a failure. A person who can watch these three things happening, my body functioning in the world of objects, my mind, emotions, my intellect thinking. So they say that constantly become a witness. Be aware of what my mind is doing at this moment. What my body is doing, especially the mind, because the mind is the biggest problem. The mind is the problem, that's why body becomes problem. Otherwise, the body itself is not a problem. It is the mind that creates problems. So be a witness of the mind. Watch the mind. Oh, sit, like now my mind is peaceful. Why? Because I'm sitting in this meditation class. So, but then as soon as I go out, you know, somebody honks at me or somebody cuts me off, then I get irritated. Or somebody shows me a finger, you know, because I didn't move fast enough, then I get angry. So in the peace and in the anger, be a witness. Today, now my mind is peaceful, fine. Now my mind is unpeaceful, I am still fine because I am that pure consciousness. So all the time, identify with that. Then the senses will not have that hold on you. Even in the Gita, he says, you know, one who realizes that the senses are functioning in their world of objects, but I am not the senses, he's free.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for a good question. Thank you.
There has to be some steps to get there, right? It doesn't happen.
Right. By practice. Actually, in the sixth, actually after this, when we finish, we're going to do the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The sixth chapter is also related to meditation. It's simpler than this, thank God. This one is a little high, that one, other one will be simpler. But also, there Arjuna, the student, asks Krishna, he says, to control the mind is so difficult. And Arjuna was a great warrior. He said, I find I can control the winds. That much ability he has. But I cannot control my mind, which is more powerful than the wind. And Krishna says, no doubt, the mind is very difficult to control. But how do you do it? Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagena cha grihyate. So with abhyas and vairagya. So with practice and detachment. So you practice and you slowly detach. You detach from, it's not that you give up all your objects and become a monk. You do not give up things, you give up dependence on things. See, there's a difference. You don't give up your wife or your husband or your children or your house. But your dependence that today if I have it, I'm fine. Tomorrow if I don't have it, I'm still fine. Today my husband loves me, I'm fine. Tomorrow he doesn't love me, I'm still fine. So the dependence on things for happiness has to be given up. So things will come and go, but I am remain unaffected. So you cannot give up things. You can give up your dependence on things. So with practice, slowly you start. And how do you do that? I find one of the best ways by sharing. If you can share what you have, then that thing no longer has its hold on you. Right? If you can give it away, the money, for example, we are so attached to money. But if you can give it away, share it with somebody who needs it, then you have, then it, no, I'm not saying give up 100%, but say even 5% or 10% of your income every year, if you can give it, then you are losing. Tomorrow you have a car that you don't need as much. You want to buy a new car and you find somebody, a neighbor or a friend or a nephew or a cousin, he's very poor and he doesn't have a car. You say, okay, you take my car instead of going and trading it in. You give it to your, that poor guy, and he can drive, he gets so happy, and you go buy a new car. So what has happened, the car no longer has its hold on you, if you can share it. So slowly by disidentifying, and same thing, you have to disidentify with emotions. Right now my mind is angry, okay, but I am not angry. See, that is the difference. Right now my mind is happy, but I am fine. Right now my mind is unhappy, but I am fine. So when you identify, or with ideas, with concepts, I am a conservative. Anybody who's liberal, I hate him. And they're ready to shoot each other. Why? So how much in this election year, so much violence we see on the TV, on the airwaves, so much criticism. It's okay. They are both wanting to win. So you have to be civil. Why do I have to get so caught up? And I am here in Bakersfield, whether Obama wins or Romney wins, did I change? I still remain the same. I still go to work every day. I earn the same. Why should I get so involved in who won and who did? I go and vote. And otherwise, once my mother, this is an old story in Bombay. I'll say it in Hindi and then I'll translate. So my mother asked him, there were two parties, BJP and Congress. There was this what called Jansangh in those days. So she asked the dhobi, the dhobi is the washerman who comes to wash our clothes in India. In those days, they used to have these washermen who would come home, take your clothes, wash them and bring them back the next day. So my mother asked him, are you going to vote for Congress or Jansangh? He says, Mataji, dekho, I don't care who wins, whether Congress wins or Jansangh wins. Hum to dhobi ke dhobi hi rahenge. I'll remain a washerman. Am I going to suddenly from washerman, am I going to become the congressman or senator? No. So how does it matter? I just go and vote. So what they're saying is, do not get so caught in your ideas, in your concepts. We get so emotional about it and we get so violent about it and we're ready to kill each other and shoot each other. Why? Over, these kind of things. So that is what they're saying. Do your best, but do not be involved. Whether Obama won or Romney won, I still remain the same. I didn't change. Tomorrow, whether Trump wins or Hillary wins, will it change your profession? From a pharmacist, will you become something else? No. You will still go every morning to Hina's pharmacy and see your patient. So how does it change? Why do we get so involved in that? So that is called being involved with your concepts. I'm going to do the same job with the same, you know, attitude. So this is what they say, disidentify and get out of the bondage of your emotions and thoughts and ideas. And that is the best way in meditation. You disidentify with the thought. Think about the parade example. The parade is going on, but I don't have a child in the parade. When the parade ends, then I'm free. Very, very nice verse. It's a beautiful verse. A lot can be learned from this. Any other questions?
If you can successfully do that, you pretty much solved all your problems.
Yes, absolutely. That's why, see, this book is not only to be read and then put on the shelf. It is to be applied. That is why we study these. It's like you studied pharmacy, but then you never, you know, dispense a medicine. Then you have wasted your knowledge. Or if I become a doctor, but when a patient comes and I don't know how to scope, I try to scope and I don't know how to scope, then what is the use of going through in a medical school and learning? Or an engineer learns engineering, but when they ask him now to build a plan for a dam, he can't do it. What use is that engineering? So this knowledge, if it remains in the book, is of no use. It has to be applied. So you constantly do that by watching your thoughts. Yes?
I'd like to say thank you, because you've answered a question that has eluded me. I mean, actually been active in my life. By describing everything here today, I'm in the middle of a court battle,
mm-hmm.
and I can't find any answers to the questions I have, and it's life-altering. So I'm saying, hey, go to this liberal, you know, like the ACLU's involved, and I'm trying to get other people involved, other organizations, and then all of a sudden I sat there and said, why is this affecting my life so much? It's because I became attached.
Yes. Absolutely.
That's the final answer, man.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, they say let it happen. The moment you use these three words, that Swami Ishwarananda, who comes here every 3 months, he actually told us one time. He said, whatever is happening, let it happen. Mm-hmm. Let it happen. Why are you so bothered by it? Let it happen. Once you get these three words in your head, let it happen, then things will become very good. It does not mean you stop trying from tomorrow, you don't go to work or you don't earn or you do whatever you can, your best. But at the end of the day, whatever you can't control, let it happen. Just make that your motto, make that your mantra, make that your motto in life. It's most powerful. Let it happen. Oh Lord, you are doing everything. Actually, there is a very beautiful song. If you can listen to it if you understand Hindi. He says, you know, karte ho tum kanaiya mera naam ho raha hai. Teri sab aapki kripa se ye sab kaam ho raha hai. He says, it is you, Lord, who is doing everything. But I am getting the praise. See, when something goes well, we start taking the credit. I'm doing such a great job. But if you say the Lord is like, if the Lord is speaking through me, if I have that attitude that the Lord behind is speaking, then whatever credit won't go to my head. Otherwise, like you said, you know, you spoke very good. I can say, you know what, I'm a wonderful speaker. See, I helped this guy too. Then the ego comes. And it's natural. When somebody praises you, it's very normal for the ego to arise. But if you instantly give the credit to the Lord that you are speaking through me, and the credit goes to you, so I'm not saying that I'm there, but I'm trying to. So these things, the praise and the blame, will not affect you as much. The Lord is just like that guy, you know, he still thinks he's carrying the load. When the carriage of the king is carrying the load, but he still, that's when all the worries come. Oh, I have to carry this heavy load. Why do you have to carry the heavy load? You're on the carriage, put it down. Let the carriage carry it. So similarly, the load of all our roles that we play, the role of father, the role of mother, the role of son, the role of businessman, the role of, you know, brother, sister, husband, wife, all those roles we play, and they are so heavy. Oh, I have so many roles to play. Just put them on the side. Let the Lord carry them. Be free. Then you are not affected. Otherwise, life becomes a struggle. Life becomes stressful. Because you are carrying the load on your head. Put them down. You are there. You carry them. I'm just free. I'm happy. and then happily ride in his carriage. He's taking you anyway. The Lord is taking us anyway, but it's we who get, you know, caught up in that. I and mine is a big problem. You know, we all are victims of that. I am too. So just have to be very watchful of that. Eyes closed. Back erect, but not stiff. Relax the body from head to toe. Consciously relax each part of the body. And when you reach the toes, then slowly move back to the head. Consciously relax each part of the body. Now observe your breath. Pay attention to the breath as it goes in and out. Every breath, I am fully attentive. When thoughts arise, be a witness. Keep observing the breath and let not the thoughts take you for a ride. Be a sakshi, a pure witness. Let the thoughts arise, but I am not involved. At this moment, I am a meditator. I am a seeker of truth. I am not a father, a mother, child, parent, businessman, employee, employer. I'm neither young nor old, neither short nor tall. I am the pure consciousness. I'm a witness to everything that is happening. And when the mind becomes still, then the witness disappears. Pure consciousness am I. Let us practice that for a few minutes. If your mind wanders, again take deep breaths. Observe your breath, become a witness, and bring the mind back to silence.